Blog Talk Radio.
Lincoln 103 and 102.
Responding to 401 Parking Circuit, Section 1, boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9. Respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911 on the Tidget 400 lower level near Carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4, boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1, boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and Rob.
484 suspect, the female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. Blue jeans, no further.
Control, high freight, 401 is a route.
Hello and welcome to a live edition of the LP Zone. You're in the zone where it's all about loss prevention, retail security, mall security, public safety, brought to you by Private Officer International. Glad that you have joined us for this exciting edition. Today, in just a few moments, we're going to be talking about a crime that's, well, it kind of disappeared, maybe a little bit off the radar, but it has definitely been reborn and has taken on really a new meaning of the word kite. We'll be talking about kiting coming up in just a few moments. But we're glad that you've joined us on this Wednesday edition of the LP Zone on the Private Officer Talk Radio Network on this Wednesday, June the 6th, 2012. Glad that you're here. I'm your host, Rick McCann. Beautiful, it's summer, it's fall, it's spring. You know, here in the Southeast, you just never know from day to day. It's a beautiful, cool spring or fall-like day. Tomorrow it'll be probably 90, but, you know, just the way that it goes. Hope that you joined us on Monday and was part of our program. We did part two of how to articulate a use of force incident, a very important subject, and definitely in the LP world, you have to use force sometimes to bring the suspect under control. You make a stop on a shoplifter, you make a stop on a person at the mall and involved in a crime, you never know what you're going to get. You never know how they're going to respond. You never know. You can't anticipate what is going to happen. Being in the loss prevention business, as I tell folks over and over again, is almost as close as you possibly can get in, as to being a law enforcement officer, because you're investigating, you're apprehending, you're detaining, you're tussling with folks, and the use of force is going to come up at one point or the other. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're working for Sears, JCPenney, Macy's, Bloomingdale's. It doesn't matter if you're working for a high-end retailer, a boutique, a shopping mall, or a big box discount store. You're going to use that use of force because many times the shoplifter isn't going to allow you to hesitate. He's not going to say, well, I'm going to get ready here to resist, and it's going to be up to you to decide now what you're going to do. They don't give you that opportunity. So, yes, the use of force does happen frequently over and over again in the loss prevention industry. So I hope that you listened Monday and last Monday to part one and part two of how to articulate a use of force incident. And if you didn't, if you missed it, if you weren't aware that that subject was being taught on those radio programs, I encourage you really to go back to those programs and take a listen to the training material on how to articulate a use of force incident. It's much, much more detailed than a who, what, where, when. type incident report. This is really something that you're going to have to vividly describe and articulate word for word, detail for detail, blow for blow, in order to keep yourself out of jail and keep yourself out of civil court. Yes, you can be sued individually. When a situation occurs, your employer is sued and you are sued, you can definitely be arrested for aggravated assault or other charges in these situations. So it's important that you understand how to articulate, how to write a correct use of force incident, much, much different than a regular incident report. So go back and listen. If you've already listened to it once, definitely go back and listen to it again. Study the information, practice and understand what it is that is necessary in a use of force incident when it comes to writing a report. And hopefully 2 weeks ago you also listened on Monday night to our Understanding the Graffiti Culture, because being in loss prevention, being in retail security, mall security, public safety, that's also an area that you have to deal with sometimes on a more frequent basis, depending on your area, and other times it's only a seasonal situation, such as right now we're entering summer all across the U.S., and there's more kids out of school, and obviously more likelihood that you're going to see some damage, some vandalism, some spray painting, and it's not all about gangs. A lot of folks think, that it is. They see a little spray painting, they see a little graffiti, and they think gangs. But as our training 2 weeks ago taught, there's really a whole culture behind graffiti. So go back and listen to that program as well. I think you'll find the information enlightening and interesting. And definitely it will help you, in a graffiti situation. All right, well, right now we've been talking about for the last 3 or 4 weeks that over the next 4 months we are in a huge branding campaign, a huge media blitz. We're out. We're talking to the media. We're on radio, TV. We're across Facebook and other social networks, and we're getting the word out about Private Officer International. Not only the organization, but also our very exciting upcoming Memorial Ride Across America, where we hope to be able to go across, crisscross the country in early September during the Private Officer Memorial week that we hold on the third week of every September. Every September, the third week of September, we have a memorial week for security officers, including loss prevention agents who are killed in the line of duty. And this year, we're going to be going across the country, crisscrossing, getting the word out, talking with media, having press conferences, doing a little bit of one-on-one, meeting our members and other security contacts out there. And we hope that you'll join us. For more information about that, check out our website at www.privateofficer.com. What I would like for you to do, if you have any media contacts, you have friends at the local TV station, maybe you've got a friend who's a reporter at the local newspaper, please get them in touch with us or give us their contact information. We would like to send them a press release, some detailed information on the upcoming memorial. A lot of media just do not realize the extent of the dangers, the challenges that private security face today, the injuries, the deaths. I interviewed yesterday with a local TV station, and they get our news emails. They get our constant contact news blast. So they understand the realization that in the private security industry, it's dangerous, and things are changing, and many security officers are injured and killed in the line of duty. So they were definitely had a heads up and definitely a step ahead of most media outlets. But if you have any contacts in the media business whatsoever, I really would appreciate it if you would send me their name and email address, because we would like to get this information out to them prior to September 16th through the 22nd, 2012, during our Memorial Week. private security officer, Memorial Week, where we have ceremonies and celebrations and time of reflection for those killed in the line of duty. While we're on the air today, you can send us an email simply by contacting us at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. You can also follow us 24/7, 365, every day of every year, simply by going to our main website at what's that address? Simple. You can get all of our social media networks, all of our links, our news, even our YouTube page, everything right from our home page at www.privateofficer.com. Just key in the word private officer in your browser, and trust me, it will take you to the site. We're very popular on the web. We have a lot of a fairly large footprint on the web these days, and a lot of contact out there. Definitely, it'll be easy to find. But right there on our homepage is where you'll be able to link into our news, to our forums. We have a great forums going on. Be sure to join that. We have a lot of LP stuff happening on the forums. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and, of course, our own news blog, all from our main website at www.privateofficer.com. Hey, how about that? We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
I was just going to the grocery store.
Seatbelt violators, beware.
I forgot to put it on.
If you're pulled over because you've broken the law.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable.
And you're not wearing your seatbelt.
It's broken, but I'm going to have it fixed.
No matter what your excuse is, you will get a ticket in addition to the ticket for your original violation.
Click it or ticket? That's pretty easy to remember.
What's the first thing you think of when I say security, law enforcement, and medical training? I think of Public Safety Training Incorporated for security law enforcement training classes like pepper spray, tactical handcuffing, anti-terrorism, basic baton skills, guard card and firearm classes, and taser device courses, or medical training classes like CPR and AED for adults, children, and infants, or CPR for healthcare providers, first aid, bloodborne pathogens, and wilderness first aid, and many more classes like California, Utah, and Florida concealed weapons certificates. So if you're thinking the same thing I am, give Public Safety Incorporated a call at 805-556-4450, or check out Public Safety Incorporated's webpage at pstrainingpros.com. Don't forget, we're an NRA-accredited school, and we're a proud sponsor of On the Firing Line with Jim, Jason, and Joe. So give us a call at 805-556-4450.
You are back with us on the LP Zone Loss Prevention, baby. We got a call in here. Somebody's calling, so we're going to switch over and see who we got there.
Oh, hello.
Hello, and thanks for joining us. You are on the air live on the LP Zone.
Oh, yes, sir. My name is Jeff Coyne from Chelsea, Massachusetts, and I heard your program. I don't think the whole thing, but I heard your program on writing an incident report on the use of force. And it seemed like it was pretty good. It was pretty right on. And my contribution to that subject is as far as the use of force is concerned, I have a very good book. The guy's name is Jim Wagner, and he talks about the use of force. And I forgot the name of the book offhand, but if you look up Jim Wagner, Google his name. He's a SWAT. He's a police officer who has SWAT training and trains officers all over the world, if you know who he is. And basically, as far as the use of force is concerned, I mean, the company I work for I mean, and most of the security in the Boston area were unarmed. I went to an SEIU meeting, and basically I asked the lady there how many places teach MOAB, and she said only one place teaches it, and it's this particular hospital, which I was trying to get into. And
right.
My point is, Boston is a very regulated city. I tried to get into this one place, and the hassle I had to go through just to pay money to get into this place. And the guy said, basically you have to have a letter stating that you have to have a job already lined up before we even take you into the school to teach you how to use a baton and handcuff somebody and learn how to use mace and pepper spray, which I have a permit to learn how to use that. So
right, right.
So,
what I was teaching is you're going to get into situations of use of force sometimes when you least expect it, but you have to know how to detail it in a report, much different than a normal incident report.
Has
to be very clear and concise and understandable, because the people reading this report was not there at that time. So they have to really understand how the person felt and the necessity for that use of force.
Oh, you're right. And also, too, cameras. CCTV cameras can be your best friend, especially if you have a good control room operator.
And
I'm telling you, when I used to supervise on the weekend shift, I'm telling you something, there was many situations where the cameras were my best friend. And the key is to know how to use the cameras. I mean, especially your pan and tilt cameras, and getting your times down. I mean, first off, get your.
It's all about details. Getting that time down, making sure that you're accurate, making sure that you put everything that happened down in writing.
CYA, and you're
yeah.
Right. I mean, a situation that awful, you need more detail. In fact, I took up EMT training, and if you ever took up EMT training, the paperwork you have to go through on being an EMT is mind-boggling, and that's pretty much almost what it's like to write an incident report in a use of force situation, because you're going to be scrutinized by investigators, the security management of your site, of all your management of the company you work for, depending on what type of security you do. I work corporate security on an insurance company, but basically you can be scrutinized by every Tom, Dick, and Harry. So
that's right, and that's why it's important to make sure that you document everything that happened, every
right.
step of the way. Don't leave anything out, even if it's something small. It could be important. I appreciate your call in today. I do have to move on to the next segment. But you're exactly right. Be safe out there, okay? All right, thanks for the call in. And, you know, that's exactly right. You have a lot of things happening, sometimes faster than the mind can comprehend. But you've got to be able to articulate each thing. You have to be able to write down afterwards exactly what happened and justify your actions, because that's what it's all about. Hey, if you'd like to be a guest on our program, all that you have to do is very simple. Just send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. radio@privateofficer.com. If you'd like to co-host a show or maybe even have your own program, we are looking for folks to do that as well. You can kick off your own radio show here on the Private Officer Talk Radio Network and automatically have a built-in audience. If you'd like more information, send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. radio@privateofficer.com. All right, a couple of big things here to talk about before we move over to our training area today. We're going to be talking about kiting. We announced some big news on Monday. We hate to regurgitate information, so if you would like more information about our new member services, about the additional methods for you to make income, simply go to our website at www.privateofficer.com, click on the members area, or just go listen to the radio program from Monday. We have brand new member ID cards coming out in a couple of weeks, 2 to 4 weeks. So if you are a member of POI, and why wouldn't you be, because we offer so much, you will be receiving a beautiful card. We're very, very proud of this new ID card. That will be coming out to you in 2 to 4 weeks. Also, we announced on Monday a welcome to Connecticut Chapter 305. Very happy that Southern Region of Connecticut is on board. And we're also kicking off something brand new called the Virtual Chapter. This is going to help those who don't have enough members in their area to have a chapter meeting each month and go through the same thing that our brick-and-mortar locations do. And this is going to be a virtual chapter. We are currently putting the members together, and we'll be announcing more about that in the next week or two. Also, breaking news, we have had 2 security officers killed in the line of duty in the last couple of days. A security officer in California was killed in an on-duty traffic accident. And in Charlotte, North Carolina, a security officer was shot to death at a restaurant. We did an interview with a local media station on that yesterday. I understand just a short time ago, within the last few hours, police have arrested 1 suspect in the shooting, and they are looking for 1 more. So it is definitely a dangerous, industry, a dangerous job. In this particular case, this was just a restaurant. There was a fight that developed over a girl in the parking lot. The security officer tried to defuse it. Someone pulled out a gun and shot him multiple times. 50-year-old Richard Snyder died en route to the hospital with multiple gunshots. It's a terrible tragedy. And, we try to get this message out over and over and over again. We really want people to understand it does not matter what kind of post you're on. It doesn't matter if you're armed or unarmed. It doesn't matter if you're an office complex or a low-income housing complex. These situations are going to rise. You put on a uniform and a badge. Even the reporter said this yesterday. You put on a uniform and a badge, the bad guy does not care. If he doesn't respect law enforcement, if he's not afraid of law enforcement, what makes you think he's going to be afraid of you? What makes you think he's going to respect you? We say this repeatedly. You know, people out there, more and more, they defy authority. They don't like authority figures. You are a threat to them. And the job of being a private security officer is definitely not what it used to be years ago, and it continues to get worse. We see more and more armed confrontations and loss prevention. Every day coming across our desk, loss prevention agents involved in armed confrontations, knives, guns. A loss prevention agent was just tasered over the weekend. Another loss prevention agent was stabbed. Another loss prevention agent was pepper sprayed. This was in the last few days. This is the reality that the world that we're living in, whether you're an LP agent, a mall security officer, or you're working in an office complex. Armed confrontations are on the rise. You need to understand, you need to be trained, and you need to be safe. We are developing courses all the time. We have a great LP course, a great mall security officer course, and we highly recommend that you take it. We're going to take one more short break, then we're going to come back to the main topic of the day, and that is kiting. No, I'm not talking about flying kites, although I've been told to go fly a kite more than once. No, we're talking about a crime surge that has resurfaced. We'll be right back.
There was the explosion, and I remember just opening my eyes, and I got both of my legs. I had surgery after surgery, and what's going to happen next? The Wounded Warrior Project said, look, brother, everything's going to be okay. 3 months from now, 4 months from now, a year from now, you'll be fine. I don't know if I would be as well adjusted as I am now if it wasn't for them.
To learn more, call 1-877-832-6997 or visit woundedwarriorproject.org.
Nurse, I need you to apply pressure to the head wound until I can get to it. I'm concerned she's lost too much blood.
Oh, no.
You in the corner, who are you? You're not supposed to be here.
She's my girlfriend, Doctor.
You need to wait out in the waiting room.
Please, Doctor, I want to stay with her.
Look, she's been badly injured. So if you want to do what's best for her, you need to let us do our work.
Please, Doctor, she has to be okay. I didn't mean to do this. I love her.
Wait a second. You were the driver?
Yes, but I didn't mean to. I swear, we went to dinner. I was just buzzed. I only had a few drinks.
Just buzzed? Why didn't you tell us that? In that case, your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great. You want to get out of here?
I can't believe this. Really, Doctor? She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this state.
HirePatriots.com is a free website where you can help our active, reserve, veteran military and their families by letting them help you. Do you have a chore that needs doing around your home or yard? Is your company looking for a new hire? Then post your jobs for free at HirePatriots.com. Visit HirePatriots.com and post your jobs today. HirePatriots.com.
All right, thanks for joining us today on the Loss Prevention Zone, the LP Zone, here on the Private Officer Talk Radio Network. Glad that you are with us today. As always, it's, you know, we have a lot to talk about and a short amount of time. Today, we want to talk for just a few moments about something that was really a big, huge problem. 15, 20 years ago, back when I was in loss prevention, we saw a lot of this. And over the years, it has diminished somewhat, not really in the headlines as much as it was years ago. But I've noticed in the last year or so, all of a sudden, it's kind of grown in popularity again. And for whatever reason, it's there's a resurgence and a rebirth of kiting. And like I said before the break, I'm not talking about flying a kite, but we're talking about how to cheat a bank out of substantial money in a quick heartbeat, and how professional gangs, organized criminals, local businesses, individual fraudsters, and the average person has found a way through the years of using the system to have money when they don't really have any money, how to generate themselves loans when they couldn't really get a loan through the normal channels, how to create money out of thin air just like that. It's really astounding because a number of years ago, I was talking with a car dealership, and on the upside type dealership, somebody who was honest, I guess, someone who I respected. I thought they had a good dealership. They were reputable in my community, and I was talking with one of the GMs, and he told me that they had several locations. In fact, they became one of my clients with my security agency, and I never really had any problem with their checks. But one of the general managers told me they had several other dealerships in several different states, and at times when they needed a little extra funds, they would kite a check here and there. And I kind of questioned, you know, I knew what that meant. I knew what the kiting was about. But I asked, you know, I didn't think that a company like this would be involved in such a thing. And he said, well, actually, that is pretty much standard practice. And many companies, large and small, they often will kite themselves a free loan until to cover invoices and things of that nature until the money gets there. And I have found through the years that, you know, both individuals and businesses do this in an honest manner. They write a check. They know the money's not going to be in the account. And even deposit it in other accounts that they have, hoping that they can cover the funds before the check bounces. And like I said, this is actually something that has really increased over the last year or two. In fact, just recently, more than 50 people were indicted on a huge organized...
Dozens of people were indicted today on charges that they're part of an organized crime ring.
The indictments are related to alleged crimes dating back to August of 2005. WHAS 11's investigative reporter Adam Walzer has been talking with local and federal fraud investigators. He's joining us now from Metro Police Headquarters with the story live tonight. Adam?
That's right, Doug. The indictments alone were enough to kill a few trees, six of them here, naming more than 50 people. Federal and local investigators are calling it a cooperative effort between the LMPD Financial Crimes Unit and the local Secret Service. The investigators say that the check-kiting ring went all the way back to early 2005, and they say the ring leader was Anthony Potter. He's a convicted felon with a long criminal history. He was indicted federally for similar crimes last April. Two of his relatives, his brother Latone Potter and his cousin Clarence Potter, were also indicted today. Investigators say that the suspects were all involved in an organized ring which targeted area individuals, banks, and businesses. In some cases, the suspects allegedly stole identities and opened bank accounts in those people's names. In other cases, they created fictitious IDs, which they used to open bank accounts, then obtain checks. They then wrote fraudulent checks from those accounts, which were passed throughout the Louisville metro area in southern Indiana. Investigators say almost every local bank was targeted.
It was truly an organization. It had structure to it from, you know, there was someone clearly directing it, middlemen. Everybody had a role to play in, just like in the regular business, and they worked hard at it and were successful.
Now, investigators say that these 50 indictments or so today represent just a small part of this investigation. They say that as many as 90 people are believed to be involved, making it one of the biggest check fraud rings ever in the Louisville metro area so far. They've counted losses of more than $415,000, and they say this investigation is continuing. Reporting live outside Metro Police Headquarters, Adam Walzer, WHA.
This is an organized criminal group, an organized crime syndicate, if you will, operating in Louisville, Kentucky, and Indiana. These folks truly took it to the next level. They were kiting checks, hitting every bank in the metro Louisville, southern Indiana area. And basically, they had a system. They had a system of defrauding the banks out of more than $450,000. Did it happen overnight? Was it something that just took a few days? No, this took a long period of time. This took weeks and months and probably even close to a year or more. But look at the money that they were able to make in their criminal activity. Almost $500,000. Up to 90 people involved. Check kiting. It really is something that was very prevalent in the 70s, 80s, and even the 90s. Check kiting is the illegal act of taking advantage of what's called the float. Now, the float is something that's used in the banking system. But when used illegally, it becomes check fraud. Kiting and floating of checks, of paper, is not only across the nation crime, a national crime, but it's also an international crime. Check kiting can be done on the simple terms of writing a check from the boyfriend to the girlfriend, knowing that there is no funds in the boyfriend's account. He writes a check to his girlfriend. She deposits it in her account and then immediately withdraws those funds. The check from the boyfriend bounces. There's insufficient funds. That's kiting or floating a check. The purpose, the true criminal purpose of check kiting is to falsely inflate the balance of a checking account in order to allow other checks to clear. So, for instance, suspect A writes a check for $10,000 to suspect B. Suspect B then deposits it in their account. Normally, if you are a good customer of the bank, they will have either no hold or limited hold on that check. So suspect B now writes other checks or debits or even withdrawals from ATMs on their account because now their account shows a positive balance of $10,000 with maybe an availability of $5,000. Maybe the bank only has 50% on hold until it clears from suspect A's bank. Like I said, if you're really a good customer and you've had no checks come back as insufficient or closed, the bank could even not have any hold or have as little as a 24-hour hold on the check, thus allowing suspect B to have immediate, within 24-hour, access to the funds that were deposited by check into the account. Some forms of check fraud involve the use of a second, third, fourth, or even multiple banks. And basically what they're doing is they're playing Russian roulette. They're going from bank to bank, taking, sometimes there may be as many as 8, 10, 15, 20 bank accounts involved. This is called a float, and many banks use the float. It's really a banking procedure. They allow you to float a certain amount of your balance pending the clearance of the check. Businesses, both large and small, use this practice for years. Unfortunately, criminals also get into the game, if you will, and they will open up an account in Texas and Michigan and California and begin to float those checks back and forth between banks. Both the honest and the dishonest have used this system for years. In the old days, and I keep saying the old days, really not that long ago, checks were sent, paper checks were sent by mail via the routing transit number, the RTN, which is the 9-digit bank code on the bottom of your check in the left-hand corner. This is what the banking system uses to route those checks to the right Federal Reserve, to the right area of the country. Every bank on the left-hand corner of your numbers on the left, You have nine numbers, and this code is designed to facilitate the sorting, the bundling, and the shipping of paper checks. It's also used by Federal Reserve banks to process federal Fedwire fund transfers, and also by the ACH, the Automated Clearinghouse, processing direct deposits, bill payments, and other automatic transfers. So if you had a checking account in Michigan and you deposited it to someone in California before 2003, it could take up to 10 to 14 days because it's in the mail. It's going from bank to bank before it actually gets cleared. And it was easy to take advantage of this old system, easy to float your account by depositing checks that were worthless, basically, that had no value because there was no funds in the account to clear at that time. But in 2003, a new federal act called the Check 21 Act. It was the Check Clearing for the 21st Century Act, shortened down to the Check 21, and it was signed into law October 28, 2003. It became effective on October 28, 2004. Check 21 is designed basically, it's really to speed up payments, to get that check cleared quicker. And it really wasn't the beginning of automated check clearing in the U.S. Check 21, it's a federal law designed to enable banks to handle more checks electronically. In other words, instead of passing paper through the mail, mailing it from one reserve or bank to the other, taking weeks to 10 days, 14 days, now with Check 21, they could actually send an electronic copy to the proper bank, making processing faster, quicker, and more efficient. And what this did, it helped legitimate customers because now they had access to their funds much more quicker, but it also deterred a lot of criminal activity because now checks were clearing within 48 to 72 hours at the most, and, you know, check kiters and floaters just weren't able to get their checks processed fast enough to float insufficient funds. But now what we're finding is that the Check 21 system, which is still in place, and it still does a great job to get checks of legitimate customers cleared faster, more efficient, getting things moving in a much faster system. But what we're finding is that many criminals, including organized criminals, as we just heard on the soundbite in Louisville, Kentucky, have found ways around the Check 21 system. And basically, the dishonest criminal, the organized criminal, what they're doing is they're using numerous techniques to bypass the Check 21 and to go undetected. There's actually a number of different types of check kiting. You can, they're for different reasons. There's something called a circular check kiting, and that really is where you're using multiple banks as a float. Your checks are going around and around and around and around. You take check A and put it in check B account. You take check B and you put it in bank C. You take a check, you write a check on bank C and put it in check, you know, banking account D. And you keep circling the wagons. There's really no money there. It's kind of, you know, a magical thing, kind of like a magician. You know, round and round you go. Where's this stop? Nobody knows. You know, it's kind of like being at the carnival with some little guy with a nut under four cups and around and around and around and, you know, pick where the nut landed. Who knows? but that's called a circular kiting scheme. There's also a retail-based kiting scheme. It's where multiple parties use a bank to be the main holder of their account. And what they'll do is they'll write checks in grocery stores and retailers and those places that will allow cash back, 50, 100. I know the Kroger banking system, the Kroger grocery store for a long time, they would allow you to write a check above your grocery bill. So, for instance, you know, you could buy $10 worth of stuff, write a check for $60, they're going to give you $50 back in cash. Some stores actually still do give you up to $100 back in cash. So you can go in, float a check, and for instance, in a metropolitan area, we're going to use Kroger's, for instance, but you could go to Kroger's 15 times that day, buy $10 worth of items with a check, write it for $100, you're going to get $90 back. So you do it 10 times a day, that's $900. You do it a couple of days in a row, before you know it, you got $2,000 or $3,000 cash in your pocket. This is a type of kiting, retail kiting scheme. And it's more on the small end, but if you do it in multiple people, you have multiple people going from retail establishment to retail establishment, getting $50 to $100 back each time, and you're doing it, you've got five people doing it, you know, it could quickly add up to thousands and thousands of dollars that you have schemed out of the grocer or the department store. Many department stores and gas stations, Walgreens, CVS, on a debit charge, they'll give you money back. So if you've deposited a worthless check into your account, say for a couple hundred dollars, you could easily go in to the local Walgreens, buy something, and on a debit card, get cash back. That's how the retail kiting scheme works. There's also something called the corporate kiting scheme. That is a much larger scheme. It involves millions of dollars, usually when companies, whether legit or false, fake companies, what they will do is they will do the same kiting thing on a much, much bigger basis. I mean, huge basis, sometimes into the millions of dollars. Most of these people are called paper hangers, and there's a federal law about paper hanging, and it involves knowingly writing negotiable instruments that have no money in there. And basically, it's really a huge thing. We have so many of these type of cases happening. Like I said, after the Check 21 law was instituted, it kind of slowed down a little bit. But today, thanks to computers, thanks to online banking, thanks to banks that have no four walls, they are based in all parts of the U.S. and other countries. You can open up a checking account online. Thanks to the better-than-average false IDs, you can buy them online here in the U.S., China, Russia, Nigeria, you can buy really good, you know, almost authentic looking IDs. So many, many people have gotten into the check kiting by basically going in and opening up an account with a false ID, a false driver's license, a false business license, and it's really hard for a bank to determine whether or not this is legitimate business or not because it looks legitimate. The identity is correct. The information is correct. They have a business license. You can get a corporation now online for $50. You can get you know, a tax ID number free. It's very easy to come up with a corporate ID using false information. So kiting has been taken to another level because many of these new organized people involved are generating checking accounts using false identification, false documents, false corporations, false information. And basically, they're going to multiple banks, opening up these accounts, and they're doing the circular kiting scheme. They're going from bank to bank to bank, opening up an account here, opening up an account there, opening up another account. You know, they may have 10 different accounts, and they're just circling the wagons with those checks, depositing them in one, writing it into another, and around and around and around, but there's never any money there. And basically, they're taking out as much as the bank will allow, as much as the bank will. Like I said, there's usually a hold to sometimes 50%, sometimes, you know, there's no hold. It depends. Depends on the bank. And if it's a corporate account, if they've opened up their checking account with a corporate business account, what looks like a legitimate corporation, then there's a good likelihood the bank's not going to have any hold on the deposits at all because it's a business account. So they're going to allow funds to float through there, hoping that the check's deposited clear. So this has really become an opportunity for opportunists to really defraud banks, retailers, again, out of tens of thousands of dollars. For my research for this program, I actually went through and checked a number of recent cases, and there were cases popping up in Oklahoma, Alaska, California, Texas, Massachusetts, Arizona, Connecticut. I was really quite surprised and kind of shocked, really, that this criminal activity is, again, as popular as it is. But it is. You know, the Check 21 law worked for a while. But like anything else, criminals will always find a way around that obstacle. If they used half of their brain, half of their energy, half of the time that they use to defraud, to be a criminal, and you know, push that effort into legitimate businesses, they'd be multimillionaires. Some of these criminals are really smart. You hear about the dumb ones, but there's a lot of smart ones out there as well. And this is a white-collar type crime. This is something that takes little orchestration. This takes a little time to figure out. It takes a little time to put together. It's not something you can do overnight. We're not talking about shoplifting. We're not talking about, you know, going in and stealing auto parts from the scrapyard or from the junkyard, from the car dealership. We're talking about something that takes some time. You have to map out your store locations. You've got to know where your banks are. This is all organized. But unfortunately, criminals use technology today, just like law enforcement, just like any business. In the soundbite that I played earlier, you heard the Metro Louisville detective say that this organization had structure. They had a business-like form. They all had jobs to do, and they went out every day and did it, just like organized shoplifters. It's a business. It's structured. They go out just like you and I go to work every day. That is their job, and they're good at it. They're good at it, and they use technology. We have found that in shoplifting incidents and bad check incidents, that shoplifters and check writers will use GPS. They will locate the Targets, the Walmarts, the Kmarts, the CVS stores along the I-95, the I-40, the I-65, the I-24 corridors, and they will, you know, mark them on their GPS where they are, and they will drive from store to store, location to location, every day in their business of theft, in their business of scheming to the fraud. And the same thing for kiters and check writers. They also map out their route every day. They know exactly where they're going. They know what their limitations are. They know how long to be out. They also know how long it takes for that check to clear to the other bank, so they know that they have a short time frame, a small window to get their job done. And that's why they're out, Johnny on the spot, early in the morning, hitting the road, just like you and I would on the way to work. That's how it works. So if you've never heard the term kiting, if you weren't familiar with it, or maybe you thought that, hey, now kiting's over with, they don't do that since this Check 21 law. Yeah, they do. They do, and they're doing it now more than ever, really in big numbers. So this is something that your store, your mall really needs to be on top of. You need to be paying attention. You need to be talking about this again. Contact your bank. If you are a retailer, if you work in a shopping mall, contact the bank that you do business with. Contact the local FBI. See what their updates are on this crime. See if they have any information on maybe gangs, teams, or individuals working your area. Network, network, network. Communicate with other retailers, law enforcement. Get their pictures out. Get their information out. Not just in your city, not in just your little neck of the woods. I'm telling you, these are interstate criminals. They travel the highways and byways. They are out there. You know, in one day they may put on 400 or 500 miles. Recently we saw someone arrested who put on 1,400 miles in a couple of days. I mean, they were trucking. They were out there, you know, hitting the roads, baby. There was no vacation for them. It was all work, no pleasure. So make sure that you contact your law enforcement, your community banking system. They all have investigators now. Get them involved. Get the information flowing. Believe me, kiting is something that can really eat into the profits, into the store. If they're kiting, coming into your store and writing a check and getting cash back, and they're doing it 10, 20, 100 times a day with 5 or 6 or 10 people, that money adds up. It's something that you're not going to recover. So definitely look into it, familiarize yourself, get the information, contact law enforcement, talk to your corporate security department, and be prepared, because this crime, which we all thought kind of went by the wayside, is really alive and well. That's all for today. I hope that this information really helps you in your job. Be sure to stay in touch with everything that's happening at POI. Go to our website at www.privateofficer.com. Until we see you back on the radio, be safe, be blessed, and we'll join you back here on Monday for the Private Officer Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us on the LP Zone. Have a great day.